Activia offers a range of yogurts which are a delicious way to look after your gut health. From the fruit range with carefully selected ingredients to no added sugar and 0% fat offering, as well as a cereals range, there's an Activia for everyone. Made with a unique blend of 5 ferments, creating an irresistibly creamy texture, each pot of Activia is a source of calcium, making it the perfect addition to your daily routine. Activia helps support a healthy gut. Your gut is where it all begins.
The annual Easy Living Furniture Roadshow Sale ends this Sunday. This is your last chance to save big, as absolutely everything is reduced across sofas, dining, bedroom and accessories. We've got everything you need to create the perfect living space with affordable prices and unbeatable quality. And with interest-free finance available, now really is the time to visit your local Easy Living Furniture store. Don't miss out. Find your local store online at easylivingfurniture.ie.
You're listening to Real Health with me, Carl Henry, in association with Activia. Activia offers a range of yogurts that help support a healthy gut. Your gut is where it all begins. Welcome to Real Health with me, Carl Henry. Folks, in a new book titled Breakthrough, Practical Steps from Moving from Suck to Unstoppable, author Mark Fennell gives the reader the tools they need to shift their thinking and find motivation. I'm delighted to say that I'm joined by the self-development expert, high-performance coach, mentor, and now author, Mark Fennell. Mark, thank you so much for coming to studio.
And thanks very much for having me.
So, you've been into the store, you've seen the book on the shelves, I hope, have you?
Yes, we've done the tour, so the publicist has brought me around just to sign a few copies and such.
How did that feel?
You know, it's a great experience. I mean, obviously you feel kind of, I can't believe I have a book on the shelves with all these amazing authors and books, and there's me stuck in there. So I was delighted. Like, it's quite a humbling situation as well, but a moment I'll never forget. I'll tell you that, because it was like, oh, I'm in Easton's on O'Connell Street. Look, Mum, I've made it.
Yeah, yeah. You know? And was the book always in the pipeline? Was it always a goal?
It was. Yeah. Absolutely. My dad got me into reading. I never liked reading growing up because I only ever saw or was aware of fiction. And then I discovered the world of kind of psychology and self-help and stuff. And I said, oh, this stuff really helps. So he gave me a book when I was late teens or early 20s, read a book, got into books. And as a coach then, because I was coaching people then and mentoring people and young people at that particular time, it's over 20 years ago, I knew the power of the right book, you know. And I think every book will give you something. And so I always said, I really want to write a book someday. And the reason it was kind of, I suppose, a very strong passion to me, I knew I would do it, was for the simple reason, I knew how books helped me and I wanted to write a book that I didn't have. And I said, what if I had this knowledge back then? Because when you're working with so many people, you get to see patterns and you get to see things like yourself. You get to see things that you know works and what doesn't work. And I said, I'm going to package this in a book one day. And then when Gil reached out and said, we'd like to, you know, be interested in, would you write a book? And I said, absolutely. I know what I'm talking about.
Sold.
Done. I was already there.
Oh, well, that clarity is important. You say that in the book, don't you? That the beginning of a journey or a goal, it's important to have that clarity.
Yeah.
And it all starts with the assessment of kind of how you are and asking yourself that question, doesn't it?
Yeah. I start there because, you know, I suppose, look, a lot of people say, how's it going? But we never listen for an answer. And that's just the way we are, right? But sometimes you need to ask yourself, well, how is it actually going? Am I happy where it's at and so forth? Now, I'm sure we'll all kind of pick things about life that we're not happy with. That's fine. But overall, on the kind of, you know, 30,000 foot view of life, are we more predominantly happy or are we more predominantly feeling down or maybe just not motivated or whatever? So the whole point in the book starts there. It says, how are you really? And that's what I'll always say to a client. Sometimes we need to ask ourselves that question and give ourselves a truly honest answer. And it's only then can we seek out to make something, I suppose, positive change. But if we never ask ourselves the question, we can coast for a very long time and leave it all under the carpet and never find change or resolve. It's good to ask yourself how you're doing. And that comes from my own personal experience when I burnt out. I was not checking in on myself and I was busy doing what I loved. You know, no one was forcing me to work all these hours. I was loving what I was doing. But for a very long time, I was working 6 days a week and sometimes seven, not really stopping to take stock. And myself and my wife were in the business together. So we were both working away. And then one time, I basically just burnt out. And I realized, you know, I should have stopped a lot sooner and asked, well, how are things? I'm loving what I'm doing, but how's the balance in life? That should have
been
a question.
So it's not just checking in at the start of a journey or the start of a change or setting a goal. Yeah. It's that consistent check-in with yourself along the way.
Again, it's not something that you necessarily, have to go out and get a journal every day or whatever. It's not necessarily that. It's just making sure that, like a company checks every quarter, how are things going? We need to do that with ourselves. And it's incredible when you start to view your life, for example, in 12 weeks as opposed to 12 months, you start to really see what's important and what's not. Because if you don't do it in 12 weeks, you'll never do it. And so I think it's merely just checking in on ourselves like that. It is good to set goals, but it's also good to have the flexibility that they may not be on the right timing and goalposts do move. So give yourself the freedom to hope.
And that's okay. It's reminding yourself that it's all right to shift the goalposts either forward or back.
Yeah. And that could be something on the minor or something on the major. You know, and as I share in the book, many stories of people who've gone through, and the book is for that, people who've gone through divorce or gone through a diagnosis, things that they cannot control, you know, and we have our own story in there of the fertility journey and eventually getting to that road was closed and we don't have kids. So sometimes there's big things in life that we think we are, you know, it's all just going to happen naturally. And then we get kind of blown out of the water. But then there's also people who are maybe not have something climactic, but they're just going through life and they've been surviving, you know, and they're happy out, kind of, but the spark is gone. And when you ask them, well, how are you? And they go, I'm grand, I'm busy. You know, that's a common answer. But when you say, but are things going the way you want? And I always ask the question, are you feeling fulfilled? And that word, it's a big word, but for a lot of people, it's different variations. And it's only then can we see, because sometimes people just lose their spark for no specific circumstance, just going through life. They lose their spark, that kind of joy. And when you ask them, well, when was the last time you had that spark? And they might say, well, it was 6 years ago, when, whatever. And sometimes we can lose our spark and it's good to get that spark back. But if we don't check in, it gets worse over time. Everything compounds. Emotions compound. They will, if they're negative, they'll get worse over time. If they're positive, they'll be reinforced over time. So it's just good to be self-aware. Emotional intelligence, as we say in the coaching world, is very important.
And is that kind of, you know, losing your sparks, that's to do with that cage concept that you have in the book?
Yes. So it's like I always say, we all kind of have, I kind of word it as an instinct, you know, that little, the little inner voice that we all have, you know, and there's two voices. It's like the angel and the devil on the shoulder, right? There's one that says you can, and there's one that says, no, you can't. Or you're not worthy. You're not enough. And the cage sometimes is when we're going through life, but there's like having a limitation on us. And I use the cage because I always say, well, a lion can be, or a tiger is brought up in a cage their whole life. But there's a reason there's a lock on that door. Because if you let that lion or tiger out of that cage, its instinct kicks in and you now become dinner. So my point was that sometimes though, we're our life can be like a cage where we're going through life and we're not letting that, what we really want to happen in life or pursue in life, we need to sometimes open the cage. Now that can be anxiety holding someone back. It can be fear holding someone back. It can be lack of self-esteem. There's many reasons. It can be because I had a, you know, difficult childhood. It can be come from a broken home. It can be from where you come from. Sometimes people say, oh, well, people like us from there, we never turned out to be much, you know. There's all these things, these inner critic, inner narratives, as we call it. You heard that probably before, but it's like the story that we tell ourselves. And it can either work for us or it can work against us. It can either put a cage around us and our potential, or it can be opening the door and saying, we don't know what the next move is. Fear does exist, but let's just go for it anyway. And so the cage is where I start, as we start, how are you? And is there a cage in your life? Is there something holding you back? Is your instinct saying, I think there's more to this life than we're currently experiencing? And it's listening to that instinctive voice, that intuition.
And having a sense of identity is important when making a change, isn't it?
It is. I mean, it's a huge part of the book and it comes into it in later chapters. But identity is how we see ourselves. It's like the person who's not happy with their weight, for example. They look in the mirror and they're not happy with their size and shape and they're not happy. Why are they not happy? It's not because the doctor says lose weight necessarily. It's not because whatever. They're not happy because how they see themselves doesn't reflect how they see themselves internally. They go, that's not how I want to see myself. The same can happen with someone who doesn't go for a promotion because they don't see themselves as being able for that position. And so imposter syndrome, they hold themselves back. So how we see ourselves, when I talk about identity, I mean in that way, because a lot of us go through life kind of reactive. And what that means is we wake up that morning and we react to whatever stimulus comes our way. We're reactive. But how often do we actually take control and say, so this is what I'm going to do today and this is who I am? And it's not in anything like great or climactic or this big, this is who I am world. It's not like that. It's more saying, I'm going to make sure that what I'm pursuing overall in life, the values and the things that I value in life are being, should we say, acknowledged. that I'm leaning into them. And that, you know, you might have something that you're working on that you only get to do maybe 1 hour a week, but that's great. You're getting to do it. Sometimes we just put a lot of things off because of that cage. And sometimes we don't see ourselves as worthy of it, able of it, or we sometimes see ourselves less than. So many people, because when I started originally, I was a youth worker basically. And I worked with teenagers and young adults who would be in the inner city, and they came from tough backgrounds. And one in the guy individual, and this is kind of how I got into the coaching altogether, but he said, I said, you know, so what is it? We were doing like a career chat, you know, and I used to work very hands-on and I'm very practical. And I said, so what is that you want to do? And he said, well, my mum just says, if I live beyond 21, she'd be happy. And my heart stopped. I said, what do you mean? Because my brother overdosed the week of his 21st. And she said, he's older than me. And I just saw that so many people have a different story. You just don't know. Everyone has a story. Everyone has a story that they see or a background. And I remember saying, but what if you could just not just be live beyond that? What do you want in life? Oh, well, I could never be because of where I'm from. And the story, I could hear it in them. And I saw it in so many people. And basically, I got to a place where we worked with them. And the book goes through this step by step. But I got to a place with them where I said, I want you to see yourself that whatever has happened before now and wherever you're coming from, pretend it doesn't exist. Pretend there's no fear, right? Now, he's about 19 at this stage. What would you do now? But posture changes. He starts saying, well, I do this and I do that and I buy a house over here and I do. And that's what happened. That's what he wanted. And that was a new identity that just needs to be kind of primed a bit. Long and the short of it, how we see ourselves is how we become. Fast forward, a good few years later, I'm walking into the RDS to a rugby match. And this fellow walks towards me. Mark Fennell, is that you? And it was him. And he was head of security. And I says, amazing how you're head of security. Now, it was an emotional exchange, yeah. You can imagine. I got out of that area. I got the house. I have the missus and I have kids. And he says, I'm head of security. And I said, it's interesting you're head of security because he grew up his whole life trying to protect his family. I said, now you're protecting a stadium. Isn't that amazing? Because that's the difference when you change your identity. No one can do that for you. I mean, a coach will only ask you the questions, mm-hmm. but you got to make that decision yourself because how we think ultimately is how we become. So what I say is, before you get into how you think, decide, who are you? Now, how do you want to think? Because our thoughts influence how we feel, and how we feel influences our decisions. Decisions become habits. Habits becomes our character, and it ultimately defines our identity anyway. So either way, you're working on who you are, whether you consciously or subconsciously decide that.
So that's sitting down, pen, paper.
Yeah.
Anything. And mapping it out and putting in the WCPT principle.
I start with that. Well, yeah, my goodness. You've done your homework on the book. But WCPT, basically the W is your why. You know, what motivates you? You know, if someone says, oh, well, I'm motivated to make loads of money and whatever, well, we'll see how fulfilled you are when you get there, you know, or even close to it. You might even be more frustrated than anything. So the W is your why. And that's so, so important. And we unbox that. C is your capacity. Do you actually believe you have the capability to go after this? Because a lot of people don't. They think I'm less than, I'm not enough, or I don't have what it takes. So the C is capacity. P is for positioning. Very important. Who are the people around you? You know, show me your friends, show your future. You know, you've heard that. We've all heard that before. Mm-hmm. But generally speaking, we will become like or are highly influenced by the people who are closest to us. And then T is
what
time.
What do you do then for people listening in who hear that and hear that all the time and they're like, you know.
Can't change my family, you know, can't change this, can't use that.
My girlfriend is whatever or my husband is whatever or, you know, people hear that time and time. They hear that phrase a lot. So are you saying, get divorced?
No, well, absolutely not.
That whole change concept. Or I'm always fascinated for people who do listen in who are in that position.
Yeah.
That they say, well, actually, I am stuck. I know that's something we're going to chat about in a minute, but the whole idea of being stuck, but how do I change that? Do I change the person? Do we go to counseling? Or, you know, or how does that change look?
Well, before you kind of, you know, in the road of counseling or relationship coaching or whatever, like before you go down that road, it's good to have a conversation and not a confrontation. And there's a big difference. Because remember, you know, marriage or even just, you know, relationship, whatever it might be, you're a team. And there's no I in team, you know, you're not a team of one. So you might be at a different place because, oh, you went to, you know, this talk and they didn't and you got this big, I'm going to change the world moment. Well, they're not there yet. So respect that fact, you know, you got to be realistic and say, well, look, don't get notions now because, you know, 6 months ago, you wouldn't have been the same. But here's what I'll say on that. I'll say basically what you want to have it do is have a conversation and explain your, going back to your why. And say, look, I heard this and this is why this kind of lit me up a little bit. This is why or what we want to change. Or you might even say, we do nothing at the weekends. we just drink at the weekends. We do nothing wrong with having a glass of wine. I'm not knocking that. But what I'm saying is, one person might feel that's gone a bit stale, or it's a bit just nothing's happening. We're watching telly and not talking.
That loss of a spark.
Yeah, loss of spark, watching telly, not talking. And they might say, but I love what we have. So I always go back to when the spark was there, if it's a relationship, or what excites you about the relationship. And it doesn't mean that there's anything wrong with them, because that's what you don't want to do, is the condemning, I know better. You don't. So go back to...
Mark told me.
Yeah, I heard this podcast. But what you want to do is, what I would simply say is, sit down and explain your why and say, look, I think we should do something more, or whatever you want to change. Explain your reasoning why and say, all I ask, can you support me in this? And anyone who loves you is going to say, of course I will. And then start with that, and then say, hey, why don't you come along? And introduce them to it. They might not buy into it. Some people, for example, love, you know, ice baths. You know, some people don't. Neither is wrong, but neither is right. The whole idea is what's right for you. Yep. So don't expect everyone to go at the same pace as you. And that's how you start. You say, all I need is your support for now and see where it goes. They may buy in, they may not. But look, differences attract. And maybe that you're the highly motivational one. Maybe that's the difference. But it's a beautiful thing, because you don't want everyone to be like you either. Because you're about like, you're highly motivational. That cannot be good too.
That is for opposites attract.
Yeah, exactly.
But like, being stuck is a thing, isn't it? And there are different types of stuck.
Yeah,
for sure. It's not just the one stuck. There are types of being stuck.
Yeah. I mean, there's very different. Some people are stuck because of something, divorce, diagnosis, something blew them out of the water, right? Some people are stuck because they were going along, happy as Larry, and then they got some news. And now life is different. That was kind of my scenario. And then there's the other type of people who go through life and there's nothing climactic. It's just they're going through life, as I say, and they've just found themselves a bit stuck. It's one of the most common questions I get asked, and hence that's kind of where I came up with the book. But when people message me on Instagram or whatever, or email me, it's one of the most, I just feel stuck is kind of where they go. They don't even know what they're looking for. They just don't like where they're at. So that's stuck. And stuck is when you don't really know what the solutions might be. You might have some ideas, but you're not really sure. So we can all find ourselves stuck for many different reasons. But the first step is admit that I feel a bit stuck. I'm not fully happy. Let me try and figure this out.
Okay, so it's taking ownership of it.
You got to.
You own the fact that I am stuck. Things are a bit shit.
And there's no wrong in that.
Yeah.
In fact, you're now wiser, the fact that you're opening up and being honest about it. I think the worst thing is to be naive and say, I'm stuck and not happy, but I'll settle. You know, I see it, like I talk about it, about relationships, in that there was a person, a woman, she was going out with a guy who was a narcissistic, and it was horrendous. And when she came on the Zoom to me first, she had trying to conceal with makeup her black eye. You know, he got to the level of violence. Because he tried to control her, and if she ever pushed back, she knew about it. But when she was playing ball, he was like, he'd give her, you know, spoil her rotten, you know. And she never thought, because she never thought she was worthy. And when someone came along who loved her, even though it was a toxic kind of love, she just said, I'll take any love. And her fear was, I don't want to be on my own and unloved. I'd rather be in an abusive relationship than on my own. And she was stuck there for a long time. Until one day she saw one of my sound bites on Instagram and she said, maybe there is more to this. It was about narcissism. And she messaged me via email, and then eventually we ended up doing some coaching. She knew that environment she was in was going to end up to be the end of her. And there's a whole reason why she was at it. I talk about it in the book. But the reason I say that is because a lot of us, that was an extreme case, but a lot of us sometimes stay in a situation because we fear.
Mm-hmm.
Well, it's the best of a bad situation.
So what if?
So what if I lose that, and then it could be worse? Or people fear being lonely, you know, so they stay in a bad kind of relationship. But we get stuck for many reasons.
Chatting about love and fear and the fact that they're such great forces in life.
I know. And it sounds kind of like, you know, love and fear, man. It's, you know, it's like, what's that? But in realistic terms, there are two, and there's lots of facets that come off that. But if we had to get right down into the two most powerful pillars that motivate our next move or who we are and what we do, it's love and fear, you know? And it's when I say fear is such a powerful thing, and fear will only grow. Like if you've got a phobia of one thing, that phobia can then become more. Like when I struggled with anxiety all those years ago, I had anxiety in one area. Then I started to see anxiety in other areas. Oh, what if this and what if that? And before I knew, I just saw life through anxiety goggles, you know, and fear was driving all my thinking and all my things. And the only reason how I changed that, to give you the short answer, went back to my identity. Well, do I want to see myself as afraid all my life? Or do I want to see myself actually maybe hopefully getting through this? Now, when you're in it, you can't see any light at the end of the tunnel. But I made a decision, at least. I'm going to do whatever I can do that encourages the way I want to feel, and that is not anxious, just some more calm. And so that came back to my identity. And that's how I started working on it. I said, no, I want to see myself. I want to be. And it wasn't like, I wasn't, shall I say, in denial. You know what I mean? I'm realistic. I'm not an optimist. I'm a realist optimist. Now, let me explain what that is. The glass is half full, but I'm also aware it's half empty. So,
balance.
You know? So for me, what happened was I just saw and said, well, I'm going to do all I can do. That's the things that I can control.
Oh yeah, control your controllables.
You know, and just make the decision that I'll lean into what I can control and see where that takes me. But don't give up, because the day I say I'm reactive, I just can't control anything in life, I'll see anxiety will fuel me. So fear is powerful, and anxiety is basically a reaction to fear, the what ifs. But love was ultimately the game changer, because I said, I want my family to not have to be supporting me and looking after, because they were concerned for me, you know. And I lost 2 stone in weight. I was a completely different person. It was the worst thing, but also the best thing I've ever had. But that love for not giving up. I think sometimes hope is a sense of love of life. And I just said, I'm just going to hold on to hope. I read a book, Viktor Frankl, Man's Search for Meaning.
Oh yeah.
We've all read it, I'm sure.
Yeah.
And he says in it, he says, between the stimulus and our reaction, there's a void, and it's called choice. And obviously he was a psychologist in Auschwitz, and he saw, you know, the darkest of times. And I remember reading that, and I remember saying to myself, you know what? I can't change the stimulus or what comes at me. I can't. Sometimes I might just feel anxious. I don't even know why. But I can, in that space, choose what I do next. So I can't change what comes at me, but I can change how I respond. And I used to say, well, okay, I'll accept that feeling, but I'm going to do this to deal. So I would always process it. Don't try and put your feelings under a rug, because you got to process them. So I'd always process and then move on from it and say, start leaning towards. So it was a love that motivated me. I think hope is a form of love, you know, self-love, if we call it. It's just not giving up. And isn't that kind of love? So that's why I say love and fear are two most powerful things. And you could say, have a lot of conversation about those two powerful forces, I think, anyway.
Absolutely. So the book Breakthrough, Practical Steps from Moving from Stuck to Unstoppable is out in bookstores nationwide. And you're speaking at an event for Purple House soon enough as well, aren't
you? That's right, March 3rd. So it's an event for Purple House Cancer, and basically all proceeds go to charity. But if you just look up Purple House, you can collect it online, or even just through my own DMs or on Instagram, markfennell.e. You can get it there through should be a good event.
Amazing. The very best of luck with the book, and good luck at the event. It's been great to have you in studio. It means to get you in for a long, long time. Your content's brilliant, and the very best of luck with the book. Really hope it goes well.
Thank you for
having me. Folks, really hope you enjoyed today's episode of Real Health with me, Carl Henry. Tips, tools, tricks, and lots of content there for you to use and try over the course of the next 7 days or so. And as ever, we're back next week for more Real Health. Slán go fóill.